And here we are again. Thanks so much, as always, for checking out the Producers Podcast. Start off a little differently. No fancy intro. Instead, fancy music. Big String Beats is the name of the latest release from Dave Bethel, who is the guest on the podcast. Bedsandbeats.com is where you can check that out in its entirety. And again, if you're working in the UK, you can utilize a fancy license that we'll learn more about in the podcast and just start using his music in your production. Something I'm pretty jealous of. Just a different system they have over there with licensing and the way that artists get paid and the way music is licensed and the way users can use it. Anyway, get more into that end of the episode. I will tell you that part one, a lot of different elements of Dave's career are focused on, but a lot of audio. Dave gave me tons of audio. I play it throughout the entire part. Part two, I'm going to feature more of the music from Big String Beats from his Beds and Beats collection. And that'll be kind of throughout part two. So look forward to that. And you can also check it out on his website, as I've now said three or four times, bedsandbeats.com. One other thing, I talked Dave into a little sort of live tutorial video. I will admit, I'm not a video guy. I've always believed, you know, figure out what you do well and get better at it. And video, dealing with video, shooting video, being creative with video wasn't exactly my strong suit. You'll see. My production qualities are epic, as you will find out. But anyway, he was kind enough to show me some really cool techniques for making fat bass lines. And you'll see that video on the Dave Bethel show notes page. So hopefully you get some time and check it out and ignore my lameness in that. But Dave gave us some really cool techniques in that. Some cool photos that you'll hear about in part two. Those are on the show notes page. And otherwise, that's all I will say for right now, except the end of part two, I'll tell you what's coming up in the podcast. There are some really cool future guests to talk about, and other cool content. But we kick things off. Dave was actually in town live. He's he works out of London and elsewhere in the UK. But he was in town because he collaborates on some things for TM Studios. So he was doing some custom work here. I pulled him into the studio to do this. So I figured it would be apropos to start off with some of the music that he makes for TM Studios. This is from the Kissville collection. Just a few short cuts from some of the tracks that he makes for Kissville and TM Studios right here. There's some musical elements we just heard from my guest, Dave Bethel. Dave?
Hello.
Man, you're sitting in the same room with me. It's going to be, now that I think about it, the microphone setup I have here. I haven't used two mics before.
Wow.
But crazy because I get to actually look at the person I'm talking to.
I'm here live and direct in Dallas.
I know. It was great. I think a lot of people listening to the podcast are going to generally, hopefully, have heard of you, if not know something of your work.
Yeah.
I have a lot of listeners across the UK who will definitely, you know you from different things over there. But for those who have never heard of you, we just heard music production, stuff that you do for a Kissville package, actually at TM Studios, mm-hmm. which is why I have you live and in person.
Indeed.
You have bedsandbeats.com, which yes. is an amazing site I found recently and became extremely jealous because, in fact, I'll get into why I'm jealous about Beds and Beats in a little bit. But tell us, you know, for the American listeners, what is kind of the number one thing you're doing right now? Why do I have you on my podcast?
Beds and Beats is a big deal for me. It's my little baby. It's something that I launched originally in the UK as a music library because there was a niche in the market for some radio music. Good quality radio music with not just synths and beats. It's more than that. It's got real players on it, lots of real players, from guitars, real live drums, and these guys to brass and strings, and they've all played on things that would blow your mind. These talent, you know, from the guitarists that are playing on the hit records, the drummers that, you know, these drummers have played on number ones in the charts on both sides of the Atlantic, to the string players, you know, the guys I used on the most recent string package I've done. These guys play made on Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, one of my favourite films, Tron. You know, these guys are playing on those tracks. And so it's a privilege to work with these professional guys. And that's why I think Beds and Beats is something slightly different, because it's, although it has got some of that electronic element, because that's what the chart music sounds like at the moment, it was about bringing in some pro guys and having a different sound to what else was out there at the time.
And Beds and Beats is pretty interesting. May as well just dive right in. We'll go into some of your background in a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's just dive right into that. So as you just said, I mean, a completely full service, you know, music production service, and not just Beds and Beats, full music. But if you're a station in the UK, anywhere in the UK?
Anywhere in the UK.
Anywhere in the UK, you have a specific kind of license, or you pay your licensing. What's it called?
Yes. It's, well, there's two. There's the PRS license, and there's the MCPS license, which is the mechanical license, which is the license that gives you permission to take something off of a CD or off the internet and put it on your system to then press play on and play it out to the nation.
And the PRS is similar to ASCAP and or BMI,
yes,
in America?
Indeed, exactly the same, yeah.
So, generally speaking, if you're at a station, you're paying those licensing fees already.
Yep. Yeah.
You have to, right? Is
yeah.
that true?
Yeah, you do. You have to pay them, yeah.
And then, therefore, they can use your service for free.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So, you get paid because every time your stuff gets spun on one of these licensed stations, mm-hmm. it gets recorded and you get some amount of money depending on how big the station is.
Yep, and how often they use it.
And that's true with anyone doing music there.
Yes.
I know a lot of this information, where I'm saying right now, is pretty elementary to some people listening. But there's a lot of people that are unaware of how the system works there.
Mm.
And tell me a little bit about we've been hanging out for a couple of days now.
Yeah.
So I should have just had a mic rolling, especially that when I first met you, I was like, whoa, you're Dave Bethel? Well, awesome. Well, I'm going to be talking to you.
Yeah.
Should have just had a mic roll on that first day in here when we were chatting. I knew, you know, only a little bit about how anything works, you know, outside America.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that the licensing was different over there in the UK. I believe it would be safe to say that it's generally more in favor of the artist over there.
Yeah.
You know, but I also, I guess, It would be true then that there are a lot more services like yours over there that you can basically access for free as long as you're getting your you're paying your licensing fee and a part of the PRS?
Yes, absolutely. There are a lot of services, all of differing standards. You know, there are some that are mind-blowingly good, a lot that are okay, and again, a lot that are mediocre, you know, and it's just a case of the PD at the station or the production director will just get a lot of these guys all competing for your business because at the end of the day, you've got to choose something you like and use regularly. And that's what, you know, I've certainly tried to do with Beds and Beats, because I come from a radio production background, both as a station voice, as an imaging producer, and as a radio presenter. I've used music, but now I'm in a position where I'm producing music, and so I kind of know what people want.
Right.
And that's why Beds and Beats has been so successful in the UK.
Perfect transition. So let's go back in time now. You look like a young chap, I have to say.
32.
I don't know. 32 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured you were a little younger than me. I could tell that at least. So thank you for making me feel less successful by everything you've done. Appreciate that.
Cheers. Thanks.
Start us off. Were you one of these guys that started in radio from the, you know, from the beginning and at like age 14? Or did you?
Even younger.
Is that right?
Honestly, I was very lucky because I had a very showbiz family. So radio was always, my dad was a presenter, and I was always watching what he was doing, sitting in on the radio show, being surrounded by other DJs as well. I my dad was on the AM station at this point, and I really wasn't interested in that. So it was the golden oldie station. But next door was a station called Invictor FM. It was the number one station in my county where I came from. And so I'd actually just ignore my dad. I'd go in under the premise that I was actually going to sit in on his show. And then I'd go, see ya. And I'd go in and sit in on the guys at FM. I'd pull their CDs for them.
Yep.
Any jobs that I could possibly do. I was tape reclaiming, bulk erasing carts, just anything I could do. I worked my way up. At the same time, I was also doing hospital radio.
Okay.
Which was my way into presenting because, you know, the guys at Invicta were never going to give me an on-air job because I was 12, 13, 14 years old. But I did get Invicta to do those menial jobs that I still respect the people that do those sorts of things. You know, I was doing everything from paper shredding to carting commercials and all before the days of computers. And then from there, I realized that I wanted to be in imaging and in production, because the new PD of Invicta in 1996 or around then was Sandy Beach.
Okay.
And he'd come from an incredible background, Virgin Radio, Radio Luxembourg, Atlantic 252 and Capital FM, where it was all coming from this American background of actually the DJs don't make their own imaging. There's a production department. And I started to learn that.
A quick note I want to drop in case those of you are just finding this podcast. Sandy was actually a past guest quite a while ago. Was Atlantic 252, was that the pirate ship radio station? Or do you know which one? I can't remember now. I'd have to go back and check out his interview. But he literally worked on a pirate radio.
I'm not sure is the answer. I know that Atlantic 252 was based in Ireland.
Okay, so that's
at the time. It was a long wave radio station that covered the whole entire country and was amazing.
Was that the one that where he got his name?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Okay, then I'm confusing something, but I think what I'm confusing for the pirate radio, which wasn't. Anyway, is where he actually got the name Sandy Beach.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was early on. Okay, so anyway, Sandy.
He inspired me, basically. I started to see that. You didn't just have to. I was already making jingles for the DJs on carts, triple stacking carts with the same voiceover on to create a chorus effect or a stutter effect. I was splicing on reel to reel to get that stutter effect, pitching up, pitching down to get that more music type sound.
Right.
And I was playing, and then all of a sudden they came in with this system, and it was incredible. It was like this big control unit, and it was called Saber by DAR, and it was one of the first. It was like an 8-track.
I've never seen one. I've heard of them.
Google
it's been
it,
mentioned
honestly.
On this show a couple times.
Definitely Google it. It's one of the very first proper editing. There was no grid. You couldn't sync to it. There weren't even effects. It was literally a tracking device that you would run your effects through an outboard unit, something like the Yamaha SPX 990 or something like that, which had everything from flanges and choruses. So you'd run the audio through, you'd maybe run it the entire voiceover session through a flange, you'd run the entire voiceover session through some reverbs, and then you play with it back inside the machine.
Right.
I mean, at this point, I was a kid. I was really only doing stuff like the ROTs and making the tea and just being privileged to be in the room. But in downtime, I got to learn, I got to play around with it and make my mistakes, which then led me on to my first proper job in imaging production, which was at Essex FM, which was in the next county, where I was doing production there for 3 years.
Did you get
years.
To work on a computer yet?
Yes.
Okay.
We had a computer system called Sadie.
Yes. Yep.
And again, it was 4-track stereo. Again, same deal, but it was more of a computer than a workstation.
Yeah.
And again, got to cut my teeth in production properly because everything I was making was going on air. And I've got some samples if you'd like to hear some samples.
Do you really?
Some classic samples from 1997.
Oh, well, I'm going to pause the tape. I'm going to pause the microphones, as they say. Let's hear some classic Dave Bethel imaging from, remind me, Essex?
Essex FM.
Essex FM.
E-S-S-E-X. 102.6, 96.3. Essex FM. Back to the music. Now. Back to the music. Essex FM. Essex FM.
Your county.
Essex.
Essex. Essex. Your station.
Essex FM.
Essex FM.
Your
music.
Music.
James's Jukebox. Online.
Jukebox
at sxfm.co.uk. The Jukebox.
The Jukebox.
Online.
Online.
The maximum music. Essex FM. 24 hours a day. Essex FM.
Okay, tell me a little bit about what we just heard.
Yeah, can I apologize? I hadn't heard of compression at the time, just so you know.
Hey, there's people today that haven't heard of compression.
Well, yeah. So. Credit to Jeff Davis, the voiceover legend. Bow down to Jeff Davis.
Okay.
It was at a time when pretty much the whole of the UK was going through a phase of using American voiceovers. So that's the sound that, you know, he was out in Hollywood and, you know, we'd dial him up at random hours in the middle of the night on ISDN, on the times our ISDNs would sync up together.
Yeah.
We'd finally get to do a voiceover session. And that was how it was back then. And then that's, you know, the production there that you've just heard there was the general sound of the station. It was quite cheesy. Listening back to it now, it sounds very cheesy. But at the time, it was considered to be quite cool. We were the first station in the country to go with the strapline hotter and fresher because we really believed we were hotter. and fresher. But we never really knew what that described, the DJs or the music. But
exactly.
Yeah, it meant nothing, but it was great at the time. And I tell you what, you know, we had such a good reach of our audience because there was nothing else in our marketplace that was doing anything at the time. So we just put loads of stuff out.
Give me an idea for what size of market that is. You know, or people, you know, you might not have a number, but...
I would say, and it is a guess, and I'm sure there's going to be some UK people listening that are going to correct me and go, you're wrong. But I'm sure it was around 1.2 million people. We called it a TSA, a total sure. area of 1.2 million. And we had 30, 40% at the time. It was an incredible reach of our
That's
audience.
Solid.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of jump me through a little bit. Tell me about some other jobs you had. I know you had a couple. Well, you've had a couple, but... I know there's at least one real big one you're going to get to, but tell me where you go from here.
Well, from Essex FM, I worked in a few different places. I worked for a guy called Steve England for a while. I also worked at Talk Radio in production there for about 3-4 months. I was head of production there, acting head of production. Then I went back to Essex FM. Then I was made redundant. Okay. And I was at a time when production was changing and I was desperate to get on the radio. As a DJ, I wanted to be a DJ. I kind of loved that. I'd done the production thing, and I wanted to be a DJ. So I started sending my tapes out, and within a week, literally a week of being unemployed, I got a gig. And within a couple of months, I was on their breakfast show.
Really?
I worked my way in and got the gigs, basically.
Where was this?
This was MFM up in Chester.
Okay.
And I did a year and a half there. Then I went to Hallam FM. In Sheffield, a massive station in Sheffield. I was on air there for a while. I was also dipping in and out of production there. I was, while we had no station producer, I was doing production.
I just wanted to point out real quick, it's funny, normally the people I talk to started at some point in their life, maybe it could have been 13, 14, 15, could have been 23, but they started wanting to be the next big jock, you know, announcer, presenter. And then eventually they kind of find their way into production. You've sort of gone about this the other way.
Yeah.
You started doing, you know, different types of production, imaging, and then you decided, oh, wait, I want to be a jock.
Yeah. My ambition has always been to be good at more than one thing.
Yeah.
And it's a piece of advice I would give to anyone, actually, is, you know, that whole thing about having strings to your bow is really, really good thing to do.
Yes.
And I'd done the production thing, and I knew that I had that in the bank ready for if a job ever came along. It wasn't that I was closing the chapter on that, closing the book. But this job came along. I wanted to do it. I wanted to say to myself, you know what? I've done pretty well. I'd won a few New York Radio Awards while I was at Essex FM. It was now time to try something else and be good at that. And so I did. And while I was doing presenting, a few people said to me very early on, you know, you've got a good voice. You know, I've heard some of your stuff. You should actually think about doing voiceovers, imaging voiceovers. And I was like, yeah, but there are people out there better than me. Well, yeah, you've got to have the opportunities to become better yourself. So I started doing that. First of all, doing commercials.
Right.
Followed on by doing some of the smaller stations, sponsor credits, things like that. And then from there, from out of nowhere, I auditioned for one of the biggest urban stations in the world, actually, Kiss 100.
Right.
And I got the gig. Literally just out of nowhere got the gig. It was a complete shock to me, and it was a real privilege for 5 years to be the station voice of Kiss 100 in London.
And that's, Kiss 100 London, 2000-something until...
Yeah, 2001 till 2006, around then, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty major. You have some audio for me. We can hear your stuff from that.
Latitude 51.50 degrees north, longitude 0.17 degrees west. Target, London, England. Population 7.8 million. Area 615 square miles. Licensed radio stations 26.
Please state your name for the record.
KISS. You are on KISS 100. Now, an event that can project beyond the boundaries of the music world.
I've just been informed that we are going off the air and switching to the emergency broadcasting system.
And we're Access All Areas. The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
It is time.
Thursday morning, hang out with the stars at the premiere of the biggest film of the year.
The end has come.
Big up London, Kiss 100.
Win sexy with Kiss 100's Bad Bad Breakfast, 6 a.m.
This day, we fight!
Thursday morning on Kiss.
Kiss 100.
Well, there you go. Pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, props to Matt Lomax and Steve Pygott for that. They are on the production on that stuff.
I was just going to ask. Steve of now, of course, in the last, year or two, just took part ownership of Real World.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
What did getting that gig, because as you were saying, you were kind of on some smaller stations, doing a little commercial work, but you get that gig, what did that do for you imaging-wise, at least in the UK, imaging voice-wise?
It led to various other jobs, imaging-wise. I mean, I was locked into quite a tight contract, but then...
Well, tell me about that contract. So you get... brought on Kiss 100, and what do they lock you out of? What kind of a non-compete or what kind of a restriction?
It was the same company, which is called EMAP back in the day, that I was working for as a radio presenter at Hallam FM. So it was just part of my, you will present for Hallam FM and no one else. And then it was, you will voice for Kiss 100 and no one else.
No one else where? London or no one else England? No one else UK?
No one else, full stop.
In America?
Well, I did do some stuff for Eric Chase in America because he'd heard the stuff on Kiss and was quite impressed. So I did some stuff for him for FLZ when he was there. Nowhere else in the UK. Certainly not where there was an EMAP competitive station, which was most of the UK.
You do Kiss 100 London. How big is their footprint? You know, how wide are you heard? Is it pretty much just London or are you heard in...
Yeah, I mean, they're also on the telly as well, so you can pick them up on the TV. You can go through and pick radio stations and listen to Kiss anywhere in the UK. Again, digitally on the new digital services that are slowly taking over from FM, you can pick up Kiss in most places.
Okay,
so that was what it was based on, is that UK wide footprint. So you can pretty much pick them up in Scotland, Cornwall. Most places,
so that would be one reason to lock you out of everything.
Yeah.
And as far as commercial companies, commercial radio stations and their companies go. EMAP at the time, I don't know who they're owned by now.
Bauer, a German company, a publication company. That is that right? Magazines and things like that.
Haven't they had a bit of a decline in the last few years? Am I correct in saying that?
Do you know, it's really funny. Radio in the UK in general has had a bit of a decline. You actually look at the figures of how many people full stop are listening to radio and consuming radio.
Yeah.
It's gone down. But it's starting to pick up now. The last couple, we've actually seen that more and more people are listening to commercial radio.
Okay.
And they're listening for longer. So I think it was true of Bauer. It's true of all of the stations in the UK, but it's starting to pick up. And I think it's a really, it's a good thing.
So as far as just another quick question on that, just to give people an idea, and I've talked about this in the past, but, the BBC stations are by far popular and the most listened to. Is that a true statement?
Yes. Yeah, it is. I mean, you look at how many people listen to Chris Moyles' Breakfast Show and Chris Evans on Radio 2, and yeah, it's a lot. You know, Chris Moyles is somewhere in the region of 7 million. Chris Evans, somewhere in the region of 7.5, 8 million.
Radio 2, is that more of the AC station?
Yeah, middle of the road AC, yeah.
So as far as the commercial stations go then, I know that they can still earn, they can still make a profit, and they still do well, but, these days now, because it's been a little while since I've talked to anyone from the UK, who are the biggest commercial stations either in London or the UK as a whole?
Well, Capital FM lost its crown for a while, but it's now gone back to number one.
Okay.
Then there's a big battle between the and they're all owned by the same guys. Capital and Heart are owned by the same guys. But then you've also got Magic, which is a Bauer station. Now, Heart is AC, but leans towards a funky edge, if you like. It's quite personality-led, friendly, whereas Magic is a little bit more mellow and chilled out. And then Capital sounds very similar to Kiss FM LA or something like that. It's very, very CHR with a slightly rhythmic edge.
Are they still using American voices on Capital?
Spice voices. They've got a couple of British voices, and I'm sure they're using a Spice voice.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it might be Kelly, possibly.
Yeah, and then they had Chris Rollins on there for a while, too.
Mm, yeah.
Well, let me take you back then. So now you are, at what point do you either go back into production at more of a larger scale, or do you just continue with whatever voice jobs you get? And now are you going on your own? Where's your career going at this point?
Well, I was a radio presenter at Hallam for a while. Being the station voice of Kiss 100 led to a bigger deal, within EMAP, which was to be the station voice of their, other stations, the CHR stations that they have, which is Radio City Liverpool, Key 103 Manchester, the station I was DJing for, Hallam FM, which was quite tricky because I was also a
presenter.
You
were the station voice
I was
and
imaging,
a presenter?
I was doing my own ident, so it was
See, I never understood that, Al. I will never understand that. That happens, and that happens.
Yeah. So I that was happening. I was on there, and I then got a job at a radio station called Kerrang, which was very cool. I was part of the launch team for that.
Nice.
And I really, really enjoyed being a part of that.
As a presenter?
Both as a presenter, and I was also part of the production team as well.
Oh, okay.
And it was an absolute privilege. I worked with some of the best production guys I think I've ever worked with.
So how long were you kind of away from producing imaging or production of any sort, you know, while you were being a presenter and voicing stations?
Well, the truth is I never was.
So what were you doing to keep yourself plugged into it then?
I was making my own imaging for my show. You know, my show was the most imaged show by far on the station or in the marketplace.
Every imaging director's show is.
Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I was literally imaging everything, and I was learning where I could. We had no resources because the production director had his studio. So I started building my own studio at home. That was the start of what was to become my home studio, my big home studio.
Yeah, we're going to talk about your gear in a bit. It's pretty sick. And you're also an example of one of these people in my head that kind of comes full circle. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Yeah. So what else are you doing? You're building up your studio.
Building up my studio. I moved to Birmingham, start working on Kerrang, and I start surrounding myself with these amazing talents that can start teaching me stuff and take me to the next level. So I'm really enjoying working at Kerrang. I do have some audio of both my presenting and some of the imaging I worked on at Kerrang, if you'd like to hear some of that.
Let's hear some of that right now. So Kerrang Birmingham.
Yeah, it's like a rock alternative, edgy brand like no other in the UK.
Okay, cool. Here it is.
Once the volume control is set, do not readjust.
Kerrang 105.2. Kerrang. Backstage at the Kerrang Awards 2004.
Kerrang 105.2.
Hi, this is Dave Bethel, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to get you closer to the Kerrang Awards than you have ever been before. With
It's illegal.
Immoral.
Wrong. Naughty.
I warned you about being naughty, didn't I? Go to your room.
The illegal download chart.
The illegal download chart.
Kerrang 105.2.
Are you ready?
Kerrang.
Dave Bethel's Evening Show.
Dave Bethel's Evening Show.
Kerrang 105.2. Kerrang 105.2.
You remember this?
I wanna be the minority. I don't need your authority.
Hear what's next for Green Day. American Idiots.
Kerrang 105.2.
Download chart.
Go to kerrangradio.co.uk and tell us what you've downloaded. Don't worry, we won't gross you up.
The illegal download chart.
Kerrang
105.2.
Hear what's new.
Hear what's new.
First.
Biffy Clyro, My Recovery Injection.
Kerrang 105.2.
Pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, it's just the we just took this concept of being very different to anything else that had been before or in the UK. Everyone else was very proud of what they do and was screaming and shouting, "We're proud to be this hit music station, the number one at this." And so we kind of came on and went, "We're really sorry, we're not that good, but we hope you like us." And just kind of became self-deprecating.
The irreverent, self-deprecating, the K-Rock LA-ish type.
Definitely inspired by a bit of that, but, you know, with a British edge, some more irony. You know, that was only a short snippet of some of the production, but the overall expanse of the production was incredible. You know, there were some very surreal elements. You know, we worked with comedy writers, the sort of comedy writers that work on big UK TV shows, were coming in and writing genius lines that would turn into something that's not happened since in UK radio. It's great.
Wow. So I guess I want to get more into kind of what you do daily now. Maybe fast forward me a little bit or take me just to the next couple big things and then get me to where you are now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Stop talking about the presenting and get on with it.
Yeah.
So I'll get very quick. I left Kerrang. I moved back down to my hometown in Kent and worked on Invicta FM. properly this time, not as a T-boy. It was the Drive Time show, and it was my ambition. Part of my life is always about fulfilling ambitions, and yeah. that was definitely in my box to tick. So I took a pay cut, and I moved back down south, and I did it. But very soon, the station got bought, and it got bought by a company that was renowned for its strict format. And it became more and more formatted, less and less freedom. And during the time that I had the freedom to do what I wanted, I doubled the audience on that station. And then all of a sudden, I was starting to see that actually I had no control of the destiny of the station or of the listening figures. Yet, if the figures had have gone down, I would have lost my job. So there was still sure. definitely a case of I was going to be blamed, mm-hmm. but I had no control over my show. So when my contract came up, I quit. I was very upset. I was very emotional about it, but I walked out with no job, nothing to do. I just knew I'd run myself into the ground as a presenter. And this is when it comes back to that thing about having strings to your bow. And, mm-hmm. and I started scratching my head and thinking to myself, what can I do? What I haven't mentioned at this point is that I'm classically trained as a pianist, did all my grades when I was at school, as well as kind of working in radio mm-hmm. at 12, 13, 14. I did my piano lessons, and it's the best thing I ever did because I always wanted to combine my love of music and radio, and I never really had an outlet for that until I quit my job at Invicta and I needed a job fast, and there was no imaging producer jobs around. And so I started putting together tracks, became a member of PRS after I left Invicta, and started just making tracks and hoping that people would like them.
In your home studio?
In my home studio.
You have Pro Tools at this point?
No, I didn't have Pro Tools at this okay. point. I just had Cubase. It was I had no money. I literally had an Atari That's right. ST and Cubase and a sampler.
I knew that you used to be on Cubase.
Yeah.
I'll just say Dave Fox has mentioned a couple times that having any form of musicianship, you know, knowing music composition in any way, even yeah. just taking a few piano lessons, is a major, major skill to have as an imaging guy.
Absolutely. So, more funnily enough, I would recommend more than sitting down in front of a piano, the theory. The theory, I use my theory of music every single day that I'm sitting in front of a computer or sitting in front of a keyboard.
Give me one example of whether people would realize it or not. I'm sure there's some obvious ways you would use it, but tell me why knowing music theory is so important.
Well, okay, here's an example. How you end things. Just recently, I was having a long conversation about how jingles end. And knowing there's this thing called a cadence, and knowing what a cadence does. So, for example, you've got imperfect cadences, which is where something would end but leave you hanging.
Okay.
And then there's, and that's called an imperfect cadence, and it kind of explains it because it's imperfect. It sounds wrong. Yet there's a resolve, which just sounds right. It sounds kind yeah. of... Dum, dum,
right,
dum.
Right.
And that's called a perfect cadence. And you would need to know that when writing to resolve something to make it sound right. You know, there's only a certain amount of using your ear and going, well, that sounds right, so it must be. But to know then that's a cadence, I can then. And the other thing as well, you can talk to fellow professionals in the business and say to your guitar player, I need, this is a perfect cadence on this, or do you cheer?
Right. So while you might not be able to play guitar at all, if you know music theory and you have the luxury of getting a real guitar player in to mm-hmm. make your production with you,
yep.
you can actually speak his language. You can get out of him what you want out of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So yeah. while you don't need to be a master musician at anything, really,
yeah.
knowing music theory is important.
Absolutely. Even things like programming. When you're sitting in front of a Pro Tools unit and you're programming music, because I know a lot of guys that...
Like MIDI, right?
Yeah.
yeah.
They can't play a chord with their hands on a keyboard, but what they could do is draw it in with a mouse
right.
and use their ears.
I was going to say, I keep this in front of me.
Yeah.
This is just a list of chords, C major, D major. Anyway, it just shows me which keys they are
yeah.
so that I can then paint them into the MIDI if I want to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the theory of that then helps you to, on a daily basis, to know, and tempos and things like that, when doing beat matching, just this theory in every single day, it helps, I guarantee it.